This episode of The Line is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Line, Trek FM's podcast dedicated to Star Trek Picard. I'm Chrissy DeClercq-Zalagi, and I'm here with my co-hosts Justin Ozer and Brandon Shea Mutella. How are you guys today?
Should I give you my answer with absolute candor, or would you like deception?
Absolute candor is always appreciated, just like a monetary gift.
I'm doing great then.
Good.
Hope you are as well.
Yes. And Brandon.
Jolan True.
Jolan True.
Jolan True.
Can I show you guys something?
Sure. Keeping in mind that this is an audio recording, but okay.
Yeah, here we go. Are you ready?
That makes it fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
La 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 la.
Wee!
He was not, and for the listeners, he was not sliding along the floor in
his socks.
I took
my shoes off.
Oh, okay.
Okay, come on. They were in the ventilation shaft and they took their shoes off. That whole Borg ship smells like feet now.
I didn't even think about that.
Well, maybe it's an out ventilation shaft.
There we go.
Out into space?
Yeah. That's how they get rid of the smell of feet. I don't know. I have some comments about that.
What, that scene? Yeah, we'll probably get to that.
We'll get to that.
No, this is great. We got some wonderful Romulan stuff in this episode.
Yeah. Got to hear a lot of Romulan spoken, which I was enjoying.
Yeah.
So. Yes. We haven't really heard much Romulan in Star Trek history. Mm-mm. Other than Jolan True, and we heard that multiple times in this episode. But yeah, this is kind of cool. I liked it.
Yeah. All right. So as you may have noticed, we are talking about episode 4 of Picard called Absolute Candor. So let's just jump right into general thoughts. What did you think about it, Brandon?
I really enjoyed it. This episode was a lot of fun. There were some really cool moments in it that we'll get into. But, I've seen a lot of people kind of online. They're kind of complaining that the story's taking too long to build up. But I'm not feeling that. Mm-hmm. It's going at a really good pace for me because we're telling one of those stories where we're building up the team. You know, like one of my favorite movies of all time is Seven Samurai. Mm-hmm. And in that movie, like quite a bit of the movie is spent, you know, recruiting the samurai and whatnot, recruiting the team that's going to be protecting the village. And so that's what I'm kind of seeing in this story right now. And I'm really loving it. I'm loving how long it's taking to build in. I'm loving the time that we're spending with these characters. So I think it's really good. And I think this episode was really well done.
Yes, I completely agree. I was thinking that it feels like it's the last setup episode. You know, we've got all of the people that are going to be the major players. We haven't seen Riker and Troi yet, but you know, they're not major players as far as we know. So I think that's going to be, I think it was great in that way. What did you think, Justin?
Yeah, like this is an interesting one, kind of like the second episode where I was watching it the first time around. I knew that there were things that I really liked. There were other things where I wasn't sure about. And then I rewatched it and I really loved the whole thing, actually. We'll go into all the different parts. But yeah, going off of your comment, Brendan, I have seen people saying it's going too slow. Not enough's happening. It's just set up. But like for me, I think the pacing is good. And I was actually thinking about this earlier today. Like, what is it that makes for a story that connects with me? Mm-hmm. And I found myself thinking it's one simple thing. Does the story touch my heart? Is it something that makes me like feel really invested in what's going on and make me feel really kind of excited and moved and all of these things? So I tend not to think about like what's the pacing and, you know, what's going on with this or that. I'm like, if it's connecting with me at the level of my heart, which I know sound is like something that's vaguer and not specific or rational necessarily, but if it's doing that, then I love it. And Picard's been, you know, doing that pretty much episode after episode, and this wasn't no exception. So
good.
Yeah. Well, why don't you just tell us about your favorite moment there, if you can pick one in the greatness of the episode. Justin.
I know what my favorite moment was. I mean, I think there were a lot of great moments, but I think my favorite moment, and, you know, possibly a lot of other people's, is right at the end when Seven of Nine appears. I was just so excited by that, and I was like, yes, she's here. Now, a funny little story about that. I think a lot of people were like, well, they ruined the surprise because at the beginning it said, you know, special guest star Jeri Ryan. Now, when I was watching it at my mother-in-law's house with my wife, and I was distracted by something during the credits, so I totally missed that. And I thought, oh, she's going to be here next week. And then when she came at the end, I was like, oh, yeah, I was just like, totally didn't expect it. So
that was actually going to be one of my complaints for at the end, that they made a mistake by putting her name in the credits. You know, like, I watch Homeland. I've mentioned this a few times, and there's a season 7 episode where there's a character who we had for several seasons. Mm-hmm. Right. And like this, I don't think this spoils anything. He goes into jail at the end of one season, and he just shows up in one episode, and they don't acknowledge him in the credits until the end credits. Yeah. So it was a surprise to see that character in there, because we thought we were done with that character. And so I think they should have held that off to the end credits, because, well, I noticed it right away. My wife noticed it right away.
Yeah.
You know,
however, there could be some sort of requirement that they put it in a certain place, you know.
I don't think so. Not in this day and age. They have ways around that. Like, there's lots of times when they don't put a guest star until the end to specifically hold that surprise.
I see.
So they should have done that here.
We need to just have somebody involved with the show or Jeri Ryan on just to ask that question. Like, could you have done it differently? But like, for, of course, there's people like me that just totally weren't paying attention and that didn't spoil it, but I could see that.
I think they're figuring by now people are just skipping the credits. It's been four episodes.
But like, I don't want to belittle the point, because it was amazing when she showed up, right?
Oh, so, yeah.
But I mean, it did affect me, because by the end of the episode, not seeing her, I'm like, well, that's going to be her then. So, right. Because I knew we were coming up on the end of the episode. So I'm glad that this surprise wasn't spoiled for you. So
it wasn't for me. I mean, maybe I'm one of the only ones, but it was just distracted during the credits. But I thought it was really great. And it just makes me excited to see more of her next week. And we know she's going to be in, you know, I think even more episodes than that. So I was just really excited, because we've talked before, Brandon, that like when they were announcing stuff, I think at San Diego Comic-Con, that was one of the things that we were most excited before, because it was so unexpected. So
right, exactly. Yeah.
Finally here.
Yeah. So like, is it next week already?
Yeah.
Please.
Like, I want to watch episode 5 already.
I know. I do too. But we have to wait some days.
Well, it's fun, because I've watched this with my parents, and I don't think my father watched any of Voyager. So I go, oh, it's 7 of 9. And he goes, who? And so then I have to explain. She's all right. Maybe they'll get him to watch Voyager.
Aubrey didn't pay attention to the credits. She's young, right? So she doesn't read the credits and stuff. And so when 7 of 9 appeared for her, she was like, oh, like, she was really excited. It was awesome. It was quite a wonderful reaction.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, I loved it. Because we went through and we watched we didn't watch a lot of Voyager, but we did watch Scorpion 1 and 2, and we did watch The Raven leading up to our Picard watch. So.
Okay. That's great that she recognized who it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So favorite for me. So I want to call out the music in this episode, because there was a couple of really, really amazing musical sequences in this. The opening with the guitar and the woodwind music when we got to Vashti in the prologue was really amazing. When he was fencing and reading with Elnor was really great. But also, there was a transition scene from when Soji was playing that card game and watching the video of Ramda, and then it transitioned to Picard looking at Vashti, and it had this really melancholy music that was playing. It was really, really beautiful. So my favorite thing out of the episode was the music. I think this has been the best episode of music yet.
Yeah, the music was really great. And so one thing that happened that we haven't talked about on this show so far is the soundtrack for the first part of season one dropped last week. Now, listeners, before you go out and get that, it does have some spoilers, even up to episode 5, I think. I couldn't wait, so I looked. So I had actually heard some of this music, Brandon, before this episode, and I knew that there was great stuff that was coming. Nice. But, like, absolutely, there was some really standout stuff in this episode that helped to set the scene. So, yeah.
I'm staying away from the soundtrack. I know. So you tell me when I can look at the soundtrack, okay?
I think after episode 5 is
somebody is what even set up to episode 10, so I don't know.
No, it's not up to episode 10 because it says season 1, chapter 1, so there's going to be more.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm waiting until then. I'm also going to wait to buy it, and I don't want to buy the digital version. I want to buy a CD copy of it. So.
But it was such an interesting experience for me having heard it like the week before and then hear it in the episode and see the context. I'm like, oh, that's cool. But yeah, the music would have stood out regardless if I'd heard it before. So
Nice. Sometimes it's neat when that happens because you develop an appreciation for the song that you hear. And then when you see it in context, it kind of adds more. Like there was a track from Bear McCreary's music for season 2 of Battlestar Galactica. It's like this 10-minute piece. And it's like truly one of the best pieces he's ever written. And when I finally saw it in context with the show, I'm like, oh, this is even cooler.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah,
that is.
Well, how about you, Chrissy? Did you have a favorite moment?
Well, I specifically didn't pick the 7 of 9 appearance because I figured one of you guys would, and that's probably everybody's favorite moment, and it is mine too. But I will say one of my favorite moments, not because it was great, but because it kind of made me laugh when it wasn't supposed to, was during the fight, the space acting. I know this is like has always been a running joke with Star Trek, right? The space acting,
the
flinging from one side to the other, and the camera goes sideways, you know,
when things shake,
the fake shaking, that just it brought me out of it, but in a fun way, not in a way that I was like annoyed, it's just funny.
I hardly even noticed. I was like, oh, this happens.
Normally, I don't, but for some reason, this one it just seemed a little bit overdone. And I don't
Picard
know.
Picard and Agnes specifically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I saw what you saw too. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That was funny. So.
But one more small moment that I want to kind of talk about as well is Frakes' direction in one specific moment.
Yeah.
Also, that scene when the transition that I talked about going from Soji playing cards to Picard looking at Vashti, the way that the camera was behind Picard and just that slow movement of it like coming down and then coming around the front of him was just really beautiful. It was a really beautiful camera moment. So maybe watch for that next time you watch the episode, guys. Okay. But yeah, it's that right after Soji's playing cards and it cuts to Picard looking at Vashti. It's a really beautiful camera movement.
Yeah. And it was just well directed overall. I mean, Frakes is amazing and we get to see another one from him next week. So
Right. So I guess we could just jump right into the episode here, starting with the what they call the cold open. Larry Nemechek was tweeting something about how he thought Gene Roddenberry might have been the one to come up with that term. So I thought that was interesting. But
I don't know. I've heard it called either cold open or teaser.
Yeah, both of those. Yeah. But anyway. So that beginning part where we're in 2385 during the evacuation. And he's coming to visit, and for some reason he's dressed like the guy from Jurassic Park. But other than that, what'd you guys think?
Other than that, stupid Picard hates kids. Look at the way he just hates them and just can't stand to be around them.
Yeah.
And he corrected them. I mean, because we know
Picard that was well done.
Is into kids, right?
I know. Picard loves kids. I'm so glad to see this. Right? Because, this is something that I've been talking about for years, and people have been calling me nuts. I know you guys agreed with me, right? But people have been calling me nuts for years, right? And it's great to see it in here, because Picard loves this boy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And this boy loves him.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
When he's reading him the book, and the boy looks up to him and asks him, what's a Perry? And he tells him, I'll show you tomorrow. Yeah. And he just scoots over. Mm-hmm. Just scoots over just a little bit. Oh, man, it was wonderful. I love it.
Yeah, puts his head on his shoulder.
For me, it was wonderful, wonderful to see that finally on screen. I've been looking forward to this, so.
Yeah. It was great. For sure.
That's the thing, is that people haven't allowed him to grow in that aspect. You know, it's like, oh, the other thing, well, Picard was more strict at the beginning and he's less strict at the end and he finally joined him for the poker game and blah, blah, blah. But he has to maintain his opinion on children.
Yeah.
Cannot change. Ever. Until now. Yay. So actually, speaking of Elnor, okay, I'm starting to get the impression that he had the intention of maybe adopting Elnor himself once all was said and done.
You think so?
And just it's kind of a feeling I get. Might be from the book, too. You know, as listeners, as we're doing this, The Last Best Hope came out 3 days ago. And go run and get it right now. You have to. You must read it because it is very important, wonderful backstory. So,
Yeah, I mean, lots of great backstory in that book, and also shows the first time that Picard is at this planet,
yeah.
Right? Because what you see in the episode, it's a year after that he's coming back to check on them, I guess. But I really loved, just to talk about a little bit, what was in the book, because and it kind of deepens what's there, because you can tell that it's a joy for him to be back. But actually, in the book, it's like there have been all these difficulties with the evacuation. And then, you know, they get to pick up these Romulan warrior nuns and take them to this planet, Vashti, which is actually a Federation planet. And, like, he loves the people and it goes so well. Like, he actually thinks at that moment, this is the happiest time of my entire life. You know, he's 80 years old at that point. So that was, like, really striking. And then just adding that into the episode where it's just such a joy for him to be back and he's having, like, such a great time with Elnor and all that. I thought it was just, like, really, really beautifully done. And it was, like, even if you hadn't read the book, you would still get that. But it just really deepened something, you know, doing it from, knowing it from the book. And then also, you know, you have these Romulan warrior nuns, the Coat Milat, which they go into also a lot more in the book, which I thought was such an interesting society, such an interesting contrast to the usual Romulan secrecy, and adds to the diversity you're seeing in Romulans. I just thought, like, that whole part that took place during that period of time was just really well done. And it was just kind of made me happy to see it because Picard's really happy with what's going on and Elnor is too. And
It's interesting because, like, the first Discovery novel that came out didn't really have any effect on what we saw in the first two episodes of the show.
Not so much, no.
Where this book, like, I plowed through this book, and I really wanted to finish this book before episode 4 came out, and I did. And I'm really glad that I did, because it gave, it made episode 4 a lot richer an experience, I think.
Yeah.
Like, this opening scene, like, elements of this book, like, you haven't gotten quite there yet, Justin, but this doesn't really spoil anything, is that elements of this opening scene are in that book, right? And Picard is, like, what am I going to do when I go down there? Oh, I'll give him a copy of Three Musketeers. Okay. So, like, him putting the Three Musketeers in his bag, like, that's in there. And that made me smile. Having that backstory made me smile as I was watching it. And then also when he's fencing and he gets the call, that's in the book as well, right? So, some of this is there as well. But I mean, like, really with this opening sequence, it's just a brief look at where he was at the time, and you don't get the information that this is actually a Federation planet, which I didn't catch them saying that in the episode, which I kind of...
They didn't say it in the episode, but there was something where they talked about Romulans and Terrans alike. So they do acknowledge in the episode there are humans on this planet. And I don't know if that's in the scene in 2399 or earlier, but yeah, I mean, they don't really say it, but the background in the book is it's a Federation planet that with kind of open arms has taken in these Romulans at that point, right? Which adds even more to the experience and it being such a joyful thing, because there's been so much in the book, like a lot of hostility and different obstacles that have happened, and this is like the one case where it was just a really great experience for him, you know. So
But I think that that background of it being a Federation world is important for what happens, like, with the sign No Romulans, right?
Yes.
Because again, this opening sequence is there to give you the direct contrast of when he lands the second time.
You
know, and it's such a drastic contrast because when they see him in the past, they're grateful to see him. They're happy to see him. They rush up to him. And the next time he comes back again, and I'll bring this up a couple more times, like, we've got that hubris again where he's just like, hey, everybody, I'm back. Right. You should all be happy.
Jolan True.
And they're like, Jolan True buddies.
Giving him these
and, like,
looks.
Nobody's interested and nobody wants to give him a look. Right. Yeah. So I think that's really interesting. And that's the best reason that it's there is for that contrast.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and Yeah, the contrast is really something. And also, you know, in 2399, which is like the present day of the show, they've got this planetary defense system, and it's like, oh, have you tried to get clearance? Well, did you say that I'm here? And they're like,
yes.
That's the first thing we tried. They really didn't like that. Don't and he's like, oh, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, it is him, you know, and his self-importance again, right?
Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah. But I mean, of course, I think the one exception is the Coat Milat, the Romulan nuns, where I think they're still a bit wary of him, but they're still kind of like, you know, welcoming him in with open arms, which is a definite contrast. And I like that a lot.
Yeah. I had one quibble with that. We're hearing all of these different alien languages, but he's reading Alexandre Dumas in English.
He's probably teaching him English, right?
Yeah. So why I mean, English? Why not French?
It's a Federation planet.
Well,
then there could be other people.
I'm being picky.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's one of. I mean, maybe because, you know, English is the kind of standard language of the Federation.
I'm just being. I think good question. In part two, it's because in the book he recites The Little Prince, Le Petit Prince.
And he does that in French, doesn't he?
I assumed he did, and I don't know if now I'm thinking about it. I don't know if it says that in the book, but
I don't think it said a language. So
no.
It didn't.
Oh, okay. I just assumed that it was French because anybody that's taken beyond basic French, that's one of the first actual books that you read because it is so widely available in French, and it's very basic and wonderful in its story. But that's a different issue. So. any other thoughts on the teaser part?
No, not on the teaser itself, but I think we should dump right into the second Vashti part. Like, So one of the things on this that I'm having a little trouble with is I'm having a little trouble buying that the Tal Shiar and the Jat Vash still have this much power when their homeworld's been destroyed, because they're when he's talking with the leader of the nuns. I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to say that name.
Zani?
Right. He says, like, we're going against the Tal Shiar on this. And it's like, with Romulus destroyed, because as far as we know, Romulus is gone.
The home system and some other planets are, but it's an empire. There are other worlds out there. There are other places that have been resettled. I don't know. I mean, I think it's possible that the Tal Shiar still has some power and influence. It's not like all of the Romulan Empire has been consumed. It's a portion of it. Like the home system plus, I don't know what it says in the book, like, you know, 10 light years around or something like that. And, you know, it's a big empire. But
I don't know. That one's kind of odd for me. I understand what you're saying there. So, but it just seems odd that they've got this much power still. So, and this is their big adversary for this. So, it'll be interesting to see where that goes.
Well, it seems like they might be being aided by Starfleet intelligence.
Well, okay, so the Jat Vash on Earth, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, and so, like, if there's a few of them going around and whatnot, you've got some people that are maybe ex-Jat Vash or whatever, which I still don't think they needed to do Tal Shiar plus Tal Shiar plus.
But here's the thing. When he's talking with, and this is an interesting thing to think about, when he's talking with Zani, like, who he's really kind of in opposition to is actually the Jat Vash, but it's something that's supposed to be the secret. And also, I mean, they go into it more in the novel, but the Coat Milat are kind of real enemies of the Tal Shiar, right? And they may not even know anything about the Jat Vash. So he may actually say it's the Tal Shiar, but that's all he can say because he doesn't want to reveal anything else.
Well, why wouldn't he want to reveal that though?
Because, I don't know, it just requires more explanation, or they'd be wondering, like, what else is going on with that they don't know about. It might make them more, I don't know, concerned about what's going on. I don't know. But I think it's an interesting choice for him to say the Tal Shiar, because really, that's not the adversary, at least as far as we know.
Right. And so somebody coming to this episode cold. Why is he not mentioning the Jat Vash? Because they're not going to know the history that these people are like opposition, complete and total opposition to the Tal Shiar. They're not going to have that backstory. So for him to be like, oh, we're against the Tal Shiar, and not even talk about the Jadfash. It is kind of odd.
It didn't, I don't know, it didn't strike me as odd, because then there's like a whole other story you have to tell, and he's trying to have a convincing story for someone to go on this quest with him, mm-hmm. and I don't think it needs another layer. It's like, we're against the Tal Shiar, you understand that, you're long-term enemies, and if he was to go in and be like, well, by the way, there's this other, like, more secret part of the Tal Shiar that's been around for thousands of years, and they're doing this and that, and, you know, you don't know anything about them, but I do, and here's why. I mean, I think it just becomes too complicated to add to that, and he wants it to be a simple plea.
Right, but again, they can write the story however they want, so yeah. He could say, and the Jadvash are involved, and with these nuns being thousands of years old, too, you know, all it's been like, oh, like, they could...
Do we know that they've been around that long?
I think they've said that.
I don't know if they said that in the book or in the show. I don't know if they said that.
So,
but you could assume. I mean, that's not something anyway, necessarily
I see your point. It wasn't anything that I saw as an issue myself.
I read it because we get the explanation of them and the absolute candor ahead of that. So you're supposed to make the jump. Okay, like the Tal Shiar are the epitome of secrecy, and these people are the epitome of openness. So maybe that's what they were wanting the viewer to make that jump.
I wonder how clear that is for the viewers. Cause I don't have that. I don't have that ability to like not have that knowledge. Right. Once I saw the episode.
Right. So right. And I guess
I could ask my wife, cause she watched with me and she hasn't read the book. I could ask her and see if she thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My wife hasn't read the book, but didn't really have any questions about that. I think to her it made sense. Like,
I have to ask my parents. I don't know what they thought.
In complete opposition, because they're not about secrecy, but yeah, it's an interesting question.
I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, we've put it as like one section, like what's happening on this planet Vashti in 2399, but there's like a lot of different like sections to it throughout the episode. So he comes and he tries to, you know, convince, I think, Zani of the quest, but then he sees Elnor, and there's like this, and Elnor is pretty unhappy that Picard just kind of like left him. It's kind of like a recurring theme that Picard has been kind of curled in upon himself for like the last 14 years and neglected all these relationships, right? That's what it felt like. But what did you guys think about seeing, you know, the more grown up Elnor?
He reminds me of The Witcher. You guys watch The Witcher?
I don't know. I haven't seen it.
Oh, you gotta see it. It's so good. I'm sure he won't as time goes on, but right now he kind of reminds me of Witcher. So
see, not just because of the sword, he reminds me of like a samurai, right? Because of the top knot that he wears.
Yeah.
You know, so you know, and then obviously everybody's calling him like what, like Space Legolas, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Ever since the first picture.
Like kind of elfish.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, very much like a samurai, like, you know, it that will be enlisted or want to agree to enlist themselves in like a worthy cause, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a thing here. So like I like this. So I'm going to talk about some things that obviously I'm like, okay, these are kind of bugging me. But I mean, like, I really like this episode a lot, right? But don't forget, this is a really impossible, no chance of success mission that we're on. And it's totally worthy of these people to join his cause. Like, that's such a cliche. When you're going to look for help, you're like, oh yes, definitely we'll help you out because your cause is worthy, because it's very impossible and you're the underdogs. And it's like, I don't know, like to me that just seems like such a cliche to get in a story like this.
I can see that, but I just kind of accepted it. I was just kind of like, they're just talking about how difficult the cause is. But I know that does happen a lot, but I didn't even think about it much, except for Jurati's reaction, where she was like, oh, that's bad.
Oh, she's fun in this episode, isn't she? That's just her reaction to everything. Am I part of the crew now? Are you guys having a secret meeting? That was fantastic.
I know. It's great. Should we talk more about... like what's going on with Elnor and like the the confrontation that Picard has. I mean, that is later in the episode, but it's kind of all related to that one kind of thread.
Well, I think before we jump to that, we gotta jump to something here that's like, so this is now a repeated trait of Picard at this point in his life. So he's not reaching out to people until he needs them.
Right.
And people are upset by this. And I think this is really interesting. And this is going to lead, like, this is, I'm wondering how this is going to go. Like, I don't know where this is going to go, but he did this with Raffi and he's done this with Elnor, right? Where he's like, okay, I need you now. And they're like, well, what about the last 14 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like, Picard is unemployed working on a vineyard, right? Like, he's not employed in Starfleet anymore is what I mean. Yeah. Like, he could go and visit these people at any time.
Yeah.
Right. And so, like, these were people that he was close to, right, at a very important time. And it was very important for them as well. And then he just shuts them out of his life and doesn't approach them again until he needs them to do something for him.
I think I know what happened. I mean, I think what happened is, you know, with what happened with his interaction with Raffi and, you know, him resigning and her being so disappointed in him, and with Elnor, like, promise, it's kind of like he was there and then he just disappeared, right?
Yeah.
And, or like the evacuation ended, or like there was all this stuff that happened where he just kind of went in on himself. And I think as time went by, he became kind of ashamed of what had happened and didn't want to face it. But now he's coming against something where he has to face that in order to do something that's now important for him. And I think he knows that he's going to get the reactions that he does, like from Raffi and Elnor, and maybe we'll see it from other people later, but he has to face it. But I think, like, over time, it just became more and more difficult, and he's more ashamed of kind of what he did or affecting those people's lives or just kind of disappearing, right?
Well, he didn't seem to expect that response from Elnor. He did from Raffi, but I think more because Raffi lost her job and got fired, right? But with Elnor, he seemed surprised at the hostility that Elnor had for him when he showed up. He didn't seem to understand it.
Well, he wasn't thinking... Well, first of all, he didn't expect to see him there. At least not in that context.
He expected not to see him there. Gone. That's right. Yeah.
So that's part, he's probably surprised to see him there in the first place, and then he didn't think about having to prepare for him being disappointed because he didn't see him, you know.
Like, I would have thought you found something suitable. And they go into it in the book more that Elnor just left there. Not there, I think, on Vashti, but on the previous planet, the Romulan planet they were on. Somebody just left them with the Co-op Milad, and you don't know why or what's happening. But Elnor, I think, is an interesting character because he's in this situation where, you know, he was adopted, but he doesn't fit in to this group because it's warrior nuns, and it's like, you can't really be part of this because it's just women. So he can't, like, find a place, but then he's, you know, at least for the time being, finding a place with Picard and being on this mission. So I think the way they introduced him was really interesting, and I like the character, and I'm kind of interested to see where it's going.
All right.
Yeah.
You have caused me to think about more Roman analogies here.
Okay.
Because, again, going back to Romulus and Remus, all right, they were raised by the shepherd Faustulus. And then they found out who they were. So I wonder if Elnor is, I don't know, some kind of special person. We're not dealing with, like, a king of the Romulans or something, but, you know, maybe
he is
the, maybe he is the, anti-destroyer, you know?
It's an interesting idea.
Which takes me into some other stuff about the destroyer that I have mentioned later, which we'll get into later, but
I hadn't thought about that. But yeah, it does seem like there's this little seed planted in the book, like he's just mysteriously left, you don't know by whom or who he's related to or whatever. I wonder if you pick up on that.
Don't
know. Moses-like as well, for that matter. And and Sargon of Akkad. Anyway, not a history podcast.
I mean, we may get into this, but there was one thing I wanted to ask about, because, like, Elnor basically says no, because you mm-hmm. left me and I'm just going to leave you here, right? And then Picard goes out and it's like, oh, you know, the next window's open in 7 minutes. And then he goes out to the plaza or whatever mm-hmm. and just looks at this sign that says Romulans only, tears it down, kind of steps on it. And then goes in as if he's going to get served. So, like, there's this whole confrontation that's coming up. So, I had a certain interpretation of why he's doing this. But, you know, we were talking about on the postcards thread, maybe I'm not so sure anymore. Like, what do you think is the motivation? Why is he doing that?
Okay, I've got my own thing, but I'll let Chrissy go first. I haven't read the postcards thread here. But
I haven't either.
Okay. Okay, you go ahead, Chrissy. What do you think on this?
Okay, the way I read that was... This is going back to his arrogance thing. Okay.
Yeah.
He looks at that and he says, oh, nobody's taught them that this isn't the way that things should be done. Okay. Or they need some kind of signal that this is not how things should be. And so I'm going to fix it for them. And, you know, then it doesn't work. So.
See, I had a completely different reading. My reading of it was, I mean, I can see that. And I think Duncan Barrett in the thread was even like, well, you know, maybe he's suffering a little bit from this this condition that's coming on and not in his right mind.
I didn't think of that.
And I hadn't thought about that. But like my reaction at first when I watched the episode was Elnor has turned him down. He feels like he really needs Elnor. So he's going to go and kick up a fuss so that Elnor can come and feel he needs to protect him and join him on the quest. I saw it as Picard making a calculation that this was the way to get Elnor along.
Oh, that I hadn't thought of that, but
nobody else seems to
see
it that way. But that's completely how I saw it. Like he was just like, how can I make this happen? He needs to, you know, fight for my life in order to be on my quest.
I would have to know that he was aware that Elnor was around to see what happened.
I got the impression that this place he was walking to wasn't that far away.
No,
if there was some noise or something, he would... It seems like kind of a quiet town. Yeah. I don't know. But I could be wrong. But like, it's funny because that was my impression. Like, I'm sure that's what it is. And then I was reading it and I was like, So it's interesting you saw it a different way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just happened. It was part of like his arrogance to try to teach them the lessons, but it happens to bring Elnor along, which was his goal in the first place. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
well, his goal wasn't to bring Elnor;
it was to bring someone.
Yeah,
bring someone. Right.
Right. So. He didn't expect Elnor there, so he thought he'd be taking along one of the Coat Malat. Yeah. But this was his backup plan. I thought. Anyway, okay, that's interesting. You see it that way.
Yeah. So. I was upset with Picard at this scene, and like, mm-hmm. that's okay. I'm okay with being upset with Picard for doing this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not like, perfect in this show for sure.
He's not, and I'm okay with that. But I'm upset with him for a couple reasons. So first of all, I wrote this in my notes as Picard pulls a Rosa Parks. Okay. I'm like, the Romulans are wrong, and I didn't think it's like he's teaching them a lesson. He's like, no, I'm angry at them for being racist. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm angry at them for doing this because the Federation, again, I had the backdrop of the book. Mm-hmm. The Federation welcomed these people to this planet in open arms, and they have the gall to refuse service to those humans who welcome them with open arms. Mm-hmm. Okay. So he's mad at them for this, but I'm mad at Picard because the next window is in 7 minutes and he's going to try and provoke some kind of fight. Like, what is he going to do? Like, so I understand what you're trying to take for the interpretation is you thought this was going to happen. I don't think that he saw that happening. I just think that's part of his hubris. We'll keep going back to that mm-hmm. word in this where he's like, I just see an injustice and I have to fix this right now.
So you think he was just going to kick up a fuss and then hope he didn't get killed and got beamed away.
I think this is an example of him not thinking things through. So yes, this could be a result of the disease that he has, but I don't think he thought this through properly. Like he's got 7 minutes to do this.
Yeah.
Okay. Scene itself could have still happened, right? Where if he was just walking by, mm-hmm. those people had seen him earlier and his name had been flagged on the interwebs mm-hmm. on the planet, right? So him sitting down didn't need to provoke this whole situation. It could have been provoked simply by him being there mm-hmm. and everything else could have played out exactly the same way.
Yeah. See, I mean, that's why I thought it was very intentional of him because he could have just like sat down and made the point like, I'm just going to sit here till I get service. But he specifically tore off the sign and stepped on it. So that told me he's deliberately trying to get a reaction, and that told me he's deliberately trying to do something to get Elnor along. It still makes some sense to me. But
you have to think about the amount of times he's been able to have that kind of an influence on, you know, a culture that we see for the week. And you can see why he wouldn't necessarily think that things would be different. So.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Oh, so one thing maybe it relates to this a little bit, but one thing I put on the outline because it was really striking, and they talk about this in the book as well. Part of the Co-op Milot philosophy is a promise is a prison. Don't make anyone else your jailer. And I thought that was just like such an evocative line that they put in there. And I kept thinking about like the different parts in the episode where it seems like Picard has promised something that other people feel he hasn't been able to
deliver on.
To deliver on, right? And I thought that was just such a strong theme throughout the episode. And it just made me think in a way that I hadn't before about my own life, like, okay, you really need to be careful before you promise something because someone else is going to expect you to deliver on that and it will bind you to that. They will expect you to do that. And just like that language, a promise is a prison, was just like so striking. It's probably one of the more striking phrases that I've even heard in Star Trek. So I had to mention it because I thought that was really great and really highlighted the problem people are having with Picard, I think.
It feels like that might be the theme for the whole season. We'll have to revisit that at the end, but
I mean, because and there's more background in the book. Like basically, when Picard takes on this rescue mission, he is basically promising to save everyone, no matter what it takes.
Yeah,
and I think Zani goes into this in the episode. Like, you couldn't save everyone, so you decided to save no one. You know, like wow, that was just so striking, just to think.
Yeah.
And again, it's like the theme that we're seeing of hubris, like. I can save everyone. Well, something has happened. And because you could imagine a world in which, you know, Starfleet won't give the support, but Picard resigns and as like his own, you know, private citizen goes out and tries to recruit ships and save, even if it's 10,000 or 100,000 people, but he just like gives up at that point. So I just think it's really interesting the way that they're kind of putting that into place and thinking about it.
Yeah.
See, but with this whole thing that happened, this whole fight between Elnor and these other Romulans, like, when they got back to the ship, like, I thought Picard was out of line with his response to Elnor on the transporter pad.
Really?
I did,
because
too.
Because I would have had a big problem if he didn't have that response to Elnor, if he just let it go, like, oh, it's fine, you just beheaded that guy, and that didn't need to happen.
I like that
he did that. Yeah.
That he talks to him, yes, but the fact that he's mad at him for it... is what I have the problem with there, and what I think he's out of line for, because this is what these people are. Okay, these are like Romulan nun assassins, and he went to hire one. He had no opportunity to talk to him. He created this disturbance, and this guy saved him, right? Did the guy have to die? No. But again, Elnor gave the guy the choice. He's like, that guy would have known who Elnor was. This is
that's true.
Right? Like, they're right there. He would have
known. And you're right, Elnor says that. He's like...
They're calling him Sister Boy or whatever they're calling him there, right?
No.
So they know exactly who he is. They know exactly what he's training for. And Elnor tells him, choose life.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true.
Okay. So Elnor is doing what he does. Elnor is doing what he's been hired for. So Picard can say, look, he can calmly tell him, I don't want you to kill anybody else on this mission. And I will explain to you what I need to do. But the fact that he got mad at him for doing what he was trained to do after being asked to come on this mission seemed out of line to me.
I see what you mean, because Picard does use the language like, I will tell you when to fight and when to be restrained. Like
Which is fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you think it was more just the tone that he was angry about it?
Right. I don't think he was justified in being as angry as he was with that boy.
I think we're accustomed to seeing him not angry. We're accustomed to seeing him deal with things in a calm and deliberative manner, excuse me. And this is not that. And go ahead. I'm wondering maybe if having dealt with people with dementia, with mental illness, I'm wondering if this is supposed to be just a little clue, coming back to that, that he's not necessarily in control of his emotions and in control of himself the way he was.
It could be. I took it also as anger that a life was lost that didn't need to be.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, maybe it was misdirected at Elnor because that's kind of what he's trained to do. But I think he is angry about this one life that's lost. And maybe it's also anger at himself that he kind of gave up and lots of people, he feels at least, lots of people died because of it.
Yeah.
And he's just like really feeling that.
He set this whole thing up. That whole incident was because of him.
It was. Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Like, so whether it's my interpretation of him pulling a Rosa Parks or your interpretation of causing this scene so that Elnor comes there, that is his fault. Mm-hmm. What happened there?
Let me just ask you.
He didn't want that guy to die. He didn't ask that guy to die, but that's a direct result of Picard's choices and actions.
It is, but if you're going to make the Rosa Parks analogy, it's not. It is his fault, but with the intention of showing an unjust system. She was trying to show the unjustness. So
yeah,
absolutely. And denying people access because of their race in this is wrong.
Oh yeah.
And what Picard doing is right. But again, with 7 minutes left, what are you doing when you have 7 minutes to address this? Mm-hmm. Right. So it's like there's a time for everything.
Yeah. That's why I think he's hoping like in 7 minutes he can get Elnor along. He's not hoping he can change the whole system or make a big impact or anything. Right.
But so yeah. And then if that's the if that's the interpretation, which is perfectly valid, then he caused this guy's death. He didn't ask for the guy to die. But again, if he's calling Elnor there, Elnor's going to do his thing.
Mm-hmm. So I can see that. Yeah.
He's, if that's your impression that he's intentionally doing this, then he's intentionally getting this to a situation where Elnor needs to come and save his life.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. No, I completely see the point that you're making. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
This actually brings us to that whole Romulan rebirth movement. That is mentioned, and there's not much discussed on it.
And there's like a symbol that you see that they're wearing like on an armband.
Is that what that was?
Yeah.
I think
that's
what we're supposed to understand it to be.
I think that's what we're supposed to understand based on the shots. And I think it's the one where it's like the red and black circle with like a cross in it, and there's some triangles behind it or whatever. But I think that's we're meant to take that to be the symbol of the Romulan rebirth movement, whatever that is. But I would take it to be like the Romulan Empire has been weakened, and there are Romulans that want Romulans to be ascendant again and to have more power or whatever. But I wonder, I think they threw it in there because it'll be something that'll come up later.
Of course.
Yeah, that's definitely an Easter egg. Like that shot was shown. Like that's a thing you're like, notice these badges.
Yeah.
So, but I'm like, I don't know what this is. What is this?
At first, I thought it wasn't mentioned in the book at all, right?
It's just there.
Yeah. Is that one of the nun symbols? Is that what that is?
So I didn't quite understand. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're probably right, though. Yeah.
So this made perfect sense to me. I mean, we don't have any more context other than, you know, we have so many Romulans dead, the star has exploded, they're all scattered. So the idea of let's revitalize our culture, let's recreate it, let's make sure that it is purely Romulan, okay, as opposed to allowing ourselves to be mixed with other cultures, makes sense in the context of the Romulans. And the xenophobia makes sense too, because if so many people think that the destruction of Romulus was actually done by Starfleet, okay, or at the beginning where they think it's all a hoax, and I know I'm getting into the book again a bit, but there is that question of, you know, many Romulans are saying, no, why should I believe you? You know, so given that, then saying we don't want these people here makes sense. I'm not saying it's right. It just makes sense.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense from their point of view. Mm-hmm. And I think also the guy who was the Romulan senator before is kind of saying, and I thought what he had to say was really interesting, like, you went to the Hall of State. I was a senator. I heard your speech. I was very moved by it. You went away. You got the ships. You did the started the evacuation, and then you stopped. Mm-hmm. And I think from, you know, right or wrong, like from their perspective, the way that they see it is, you did something in order to say that you're helping us, and then you stopped.
Yeah.
And then we're just kind of like scattered and weakened. I mean, it, from their point of view, they almost see it as something that the Federation is trying to take advantage of to be ascendant over the Romulans.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
That's kind of how they're feeling. Yeah. Which is interesting.
Yeah.
So I feel like they're building something on that and how the Romulans feel about things after the supernova and they've been scattered. And that's going to kind of connect into the other things, I think.
Yeah. It, in terms of, I always go back to historical context, this actually reminded me of the creation of Israel after World War II. You have a people who have been utterly scattered. We're going to get them into this area because nowhere else wants them. Okay, after World War II, a lot of the Jews that were taken out of the camps where they had originally lived, they didn't want them anymore. And so Israel was this place for them to go. And then once they're there, how do we recreate our society? And there's all these different cultures that are coming into it, even though they have the commonality of the religion, as the Romulans have the commonality being Romulan. And it produces a great amount of xenophobia. Against the Palestinians. So I think there's a bit of an analogy there too.
But similarly for the Romulans, like there's a lot of different kinds of Romulans that we're seeing, right? And there are ones that are maybe, you know, side by side or having to live together that wouldn't have had to before because they've been scattered from all these different worlds. So
I
hope we get more about like the general situation of like, the Romulan Empire, is it still around? What's it like? What's the situation with the different Romulan groups that maybe, you know, this is a like from the book, this is a Federation world. Are there other worlds that that they've gone to? How's that affecting things? I hope we'll see more of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Anything else about that scene or those ideas?
No, I don't think so. I think I've exhausted the planet.
Well, then let me end on a funny note. The first thing I thought when I saw that senator beheaded was, well, I guess we don't need to worry about Quentin Tarantino doing a Star Trek movie anymore.
Oh, yeah, I was actually quite surprised by that. But
and his blood was very bright green. Very bright.
It was very bright green.
But,
Yeah.
Bravo. Bring Quentin Tarantino back.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Yep.
All right, so
I'm tweeting. You got to tweet that out after because I don't even want to take credit from you on that. You tweet that out, and I will retweet it because that is brilliant.
Thank you. Is
brilliant. And it's got to. You got to say like, yeah. Now what do you got to say about Quentin Tarantino Trek?
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, I will do that.
Yeah, it was quite graphic.
You're my hero, Chrissy.
Hardly. Right. Okay. So then, going from that, actually, we can go to some other. Potentially amusingness aboard the La Serena. I know I'm mispronouncing that, but the ship with where all of our characters are there with Rios and everybody. And I love the holograms. Okay,
yes, the attitude call them in the subtitles.
Yeah,
they call him Mr. Hospitality.
Mr. Hospitality. Yeah, which is great.
And the gunner is drunk, or at least hungover.
He's very disheveled.
Yeah. They're fantastic.
I mean, let's just take a moment to really appreciate Santiago Cabrera and all these characters.
Yes.
He's playing with these different accents and different ways of being, and like, they look different and they dress different, and it's amazing. And I just love it so much. I hope we have like two new holograms every week or something.
It was very...
Yeah. I just like the idea. I'd never even thought of a hospitality hologram.
No.
But like when you see that hologram, you know, you see Picard in like the recreation of, I guess, his study at the vineyard, which I thought was pretty interesting for, I like it though, because it's just kind of like a reminder of his home on Earth. And, anyway, I like that part a lot, and they can have meetings there and stuff.
I like how,
got to make use of that set.
to the exact specifications.
Yeah, along with the necklace sitting there too. But I like how it seems as though I'm blanking on the Romulan guy's name that lives at the vineyard.
We got a proper pronunciation apparently here too.
Yeah,
Shebon.
Okay.
Chibon.
Well, that's what the hologram says, but I think when his name is said elsewhere, it's said as Chibon.
Chibon, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. He called him Chibon.
I thought that was just like a quirky part of this character's accent or something.
Yeah.
What accent was this one? I think it's supposed to be
American.
Was it?
I think so.
Yeah, it's on.
Well,
like
I guess that makes sense that Americans not trying hard enough to say names properly.
Yes.
Cliche.
But you know what? When I watched the episode the first time around, I don't do it with the subtitles. Uh-huh. So when I watched it the first time around, I was like, is that a reference to Michael Chabon?
Well, that's what I thought.
That's
too,
what I thought too.
And then I saw the subtitles. I'm like, Chabon? Oh, okay. But
yeah. See, I put the subtitles on because I wanted to find out what accent is that, right? Yeah. Like, because
it didn't say this time, did it?
Previous week they said Irish and British. I think
it's the default Star Trek accent,
which is American.
Apparently.
We have the subtitles on always because my father's hard of hearing. So there's.
Let's also acknowledge that that Elnor as an adult has an Australian accent because the actor is Australian. I think that's great.
Okay. Yeah.
If we're going to go by what's her name? Laris's, she was taught by Irish. Then, mm-hmm. So this guy went to Earth and was taught by Australians?
Well, no. This is a Federation colony of Vashti, right? So he learned it from somebody Australian.
A lot of people seem to have problem with the accents. I don't know.
I think it's great. I mean, everybody in Star Trek is supposed to have like an American accent. It's fine.
It doesn't bother me at all. I don't know why it's bothering a lot.
They're coming
up with explanations though. We're like, how does this got to fit in my little perfect box of Star Trek? Well, then I've got to come up and jump around that she was taught by Irish people. Then that's how it makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, then how do you explain this? Yeah. Like, I don't know. It's like, I don't need an explanation for this.
But here's the important thing. What would the hologram with a Canadian accent do on the ship?
He'd fry some back bacon and Tim Horton's coffee would be poured and he'd play some hockey.
Okay.
All right.
So, yeah.
I want one. I want a Canadian hologram.
Maybe there is one
coming up. And I want
him
to start calling people a frickin' hoser.
Next season,
maybe.
That'd be
hilarious, wouldn't it?
Yeah. We need a Canadian accent on the show.
Next episode, maybe. Anyway,
so,
that's an aside.
So, what got me was that it seemed as though Chibon made a point of reaching out to this ship, okay, or that he talked to Rios or the hospitality hologram or whatever to do this for Picard, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Which is just...
It's just a
it
really helpful hospitality hologram that's just reaching out without asking Picard.
Well, yeah. And that makes less sense. But it's a very sweet and wonderful thing for him to do, you know, to make sure that he's comfortable. And it's a way of saying, I can't be there, but here's a way I can help.
Yeah.
And it's also very Mr. Carson, if we're going back to the two of them being Mr. Carson and Mrs. Hughes. But that's another thing entirely.
Yeah. But I put this on the outline, like Life Aboard La Sirena, because now these people are together. They're living there, right? They're interacting with each other. I think may have mentioned before, the conversation between like Girardi and Rios, where they're just talking about the book. And I mean, it's just kind of like everyday stuff. And maybe for some people that doesn't work for the pacing, but I just like that they're making it just like a real lived in ship where these things happen and people talk about stuff.
Oh, I love it.
I thought that was really fun and kind of getting you to acclimated to being on this ship, which I think we're going to be on for a while in the same way that you get acclimated to being on a ship on a previous Star Trek show. So I think I like those scenes a lot on the ship.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Before I forget, the holographic study did answer a question that I had. Because in the trailer, it looked like Seven was confronting Picard in his study. And so after they left, I was thinking, when are they going to go back to Earth? But now we don't have to do that.
And now we know, since she's at the end of the episode and she'll be on the ship, he's just going to meet her in like the holodeck.
Yeah.
So that answers that question for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is cool. And I mean, sure, a bunch of different people that might come aboard, meet him in a study. Who knows? It'll be like his ready room, kind of, right?
His ready room.
that actually makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So one other example of these people being friends with Raffi and Picard being with friends is that scene where she goes up to him and talks to him about Vashti, right? And, you know, she's like do we need to go down there? Do we need to do this? He's like, I may not come this way ever again. Like, he's acknowledging his age. He's acknowledging that he's getting old, right? Uh-huh. He's thinking of his disease in his head, right? This problem he's got in his head. Uh-huh. And then she says to him, and again, it's something from the book, right? Uh-huh. But she says, what did we used to say?
Yep.
One impossible thing at a time, right? And that's such a wonderful callback to the book.
Uh-huh. It is.
Right? Again, I truly love that. I thought it was great. So I want to make sure that we call that out. But just that moment between him and Raffi, because Raffi's a bit, how do you pronounce the word? Acerbic? Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Right? She's not the kind of people that we've seen before interact with Picard. And that's why Picard likes her.
Yes.
Right? That's what he likes about her. Mm-hmm. And to get that moment and to know that, yes, she's like frustrated with him because of who Picard is, right? They are still really good friends.
Yes.
And they still mean a lot to each other. And just that moment when she pulls him aside and talks to him, it was really beautiful. I really loved it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, I want to talk about it because a lot of people seem to have a problem with the JL nickname.
And
it came up a lot after the last episode. I don't understand that.
I think it's great.
I do too. Fine. I think it's wonderful.
They serve together for a while and it's and they talk about it in the book as well. Like she doesn't call him that at first, but after a while she does. And I think she says in the book, like, well, he's never said that he's had a problem, and it sure gets his attention. You know, like, to me, it just fits in, and I think it's fine. I mean, they've known each other for a while. They're familiar. But you're right. That scene does show they know each other and, like, who each other are, and, that was really nice, and I hope we'll get more of those kinds of moments. Like, I think the really interesting thing about this show is you're on this ship, right? And I think right now, besides the holograms, there's like five people on this ship or something, like five or six, I think.
Yeah.
And that's a contrast even to like a smaller ship, like, I don't know, Voyager or the Defiant, where there's still like, you know, a few dozen people on the Defiant, I think, and like 150 on Voyager or something. It's really small. Like, you can see all the people the ship in the room.
Yeah.
And I think there's something really great about that and to see that interaction, because I think it's a rare thing that over a longer period of time we'd see such a small crew like that, right? Like, I mean, you'd see people in runabouts or shuttlecraft and there'd be a couple people, but like, this is who we're going to follow for a while, and I just think that's a really cool idea for them to go with. Mm-hmm.
One other thing I want to point out that I want to make sure before we move on is with these holograms on the ship, that hospitality program shut himself off.
He kind of did, yeah.
Right?
Where he's like, sorry.
He activated himself, right?
Yeah, he did.
So, like, not a lot of, like, the doctor was the first one that ever had that ability, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, like, I don't know if there's anything to look into that. Does this hospitality program have sentience that he's able to make that determination?
Because
that's why the doctor asked for it, because he's like, people are leaving me on when I shouldn't be. They're not, they're shutting me off in the middle of whatever I'm doing, and it's not good timing.
And it seemed for the hospitality hologram that it was like, oh, Rios is coming in and he hates me, so I'm going to turn myself off, right? Like, it was very self-aware.
After.
Very self-aware.
Mm-hmm. Very self-aware. That's one of the traits, is it not? And measure of a man?
It is. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. I think they're consciously placing in front of us these holograms because there's something that's important about it. I'm not sure what that is yet, but I'm intrigued.
Yeah. And then I got that the Spanish pilot's name was Emmett.
Yes. I made a note of that. He's the only one that has a name.
I think he calls him Emmett, but I wasn't sure if that was supposed to be based on abbreviation, because he talks about it as like a tactical hologram, but
yeah, but I don't know what the M would be, but but it could be like a nickname based on the, like, R2-D2, they call him R2. Yeah. And when you read a book, it's A-R-T-O-O.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And 3PO, when you read it in a book, it's T-H-R-E-E-P-I-O, right? Like, they write it out like that. Yeah. So. Yeah, it could be something like that, where it's just like a nickname based on emergency tactical hologram or something like that.
So, related to that, have you guys read the Corps of Engineers novellas?
I've read most of them.
Most of them. Okay, so this might sound familiar. Because there is an EMH in those books on the Da Vinci that one of the doctors nicknames Emmett. And it made me think of that. I don't know if they're pulling it out from that, but... but it made me think of that immediately because it's just such a distinctive to like give like a hologram a nickname. But you're right. There's something that's going on with holograms. And of course, we talked before, like Robert Picardo said he was in talks to play the Doctor again in season two. So there's something that's leading up to it. I'm really intrigued. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We'll see.
All right. So then we got to see this gorgeous, old-fashioned Romulan bird of prey.
Oh, it was so amazing. So I know you were cool. So excited when you first saw it in the trailer, and I was too. And like, what was amazing about this is you finally get to see the real scale of this ship. Mm-hmm. It feels pretty big, at least compared to, you know, La Sirena, but it was like, oh, it was just so gorgeous and wonderful, and oh, that was that was amazing, right?
Yeah.
And I gotta say it, I'm sorry, it looked beautiful, and I love seeing TOS design, and it's like, I'm glad they didn't try and update the design of it. It looks beautiful.
Well, they updated it enough to make it look modern. You know, it didn't look like a plastic model from the 60s.
But it's not really different. Yeah.
It's not really different. So I loved it. I thought it was beautiful. Yeah. And they did a great job of it. I am furious with Seven of Nine for blowing that wing off that ship. I want to see it again.
It's a classic. Know, right? How could you do that?
I hope they fix that ship. I want to see it again.
Yeah. Well, it was funny because like the it shears off that part and like the nacelle is floating, but it's still firing. At that point, right?
Well, but my wife and Aubrey watch it with me, and when that wing came off, they were both like, "Whoa!" Like, and so was I.
It was so beautiful intact. Yeah. But no, that was just so wonderful to see. And like related to that, there, you know, that was going on. You had Seven ship. But I really like the planetary defense system that they had. I thought that's really great because you don't tend – like, I mean, I think we've seen some things in Star Trek before where it seems like it's a defense system, but it's like these orbital weapons platforms like the Cardassians had, and it doesn't seem like it's going to get complete coverage. But they had basically like kind of like a shield around the planet, right? Which I thought was really cool to see. And like at one point you see like Seven ship like bounce off the shield. There was just something about that whole sequence between the TOS era bird of prey and like this planetary defense system that felt like something we hadn't seen before. And that was really cool to see.
I have to say that my first thought when I saw that it was completely encased, as it were, was Spaceballs.
Yes, I was just going to say, why didn't they try the combination 1, 2, 3, 4, 5?
Yep. It's the kind of combination an idiot would have on his luggage. Yes. Oh, yeah. And so then I was totally distracted. They have space balls. They're going to take all the air. So.
It's just a giant vacuum cleaner vacuum out the air. Yeah.
Yes, shaped like the Statue of Liberty.
No, I didn't even think about that at the time, but.
That's classic. That's
I love it.
Yeah, Star Trek Spaceballs.
Oh yes.
And then I mean, because we knew, like, because I saw Jerry Ryan's name in the credits, it really, really shone a flashlight on their like, he's hailing us. Watch out for his ship.
Yeah.
He's coming over. Beam him over. They like enunciated the male of every time they said it, so that it's like, it's not a man. Woo.
I couldn't tell if it was like in the scene, at least, like they were just like making that assumption, or if there was something about the information Seven was sending to give them that misrepresentation. I couldn't quite tell.
See, here's the thing that actually did. I caught that not because it was like, oh, we're going to, you know, say it's a man and then it's Seven, but because modern parlance allows for a singular they and them. And so
they're hailing us.
Yeah. So there's absolutely no reason by the 21st century for people to be assuming gender, especially when you add in all these other cultures that have different genders.
Yeah. Well, there was something about it that made me think like, oh, maybe there was information in like the hailing message. I think that was even before hail, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that she was maybe sending out, because they can tell, you know, they can scan a ship and tell who's on it, you know, at least the generally thing, like that's a male human or a female human.
I think in some cases, but maybe it has shielding or something so that it doesn't. But while we're talking about Seven, and before I forget, So one of the things they talk about is activity from the Fenris Rangers, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
And I think Jeremy Ryan did talk about it in an interview that Seven is part of the Fenris Rangers. I mean, I think it's strongly implied in the episode regardless. Mm-hmm. But the one interesting thing that somebody had figured out at one point is that, let me see if I've got this right. So that Fenris is part of Norse mythology, and it's a great wolf bound by the gods with a magic rope. And wolf, you know, I think that ties into Romulus and Remus, that mythology, right, Chrissy?
Yes, it does.
Talk about that a little bit.
Yes, it does. yes, the wolf that that cared for them before they were picked up by Faustulus. So, yeah.
That's right, the she-wolf that cares for Romulus and Remus. So it was kind of like this oblique connection, but I thought that was really interesting that somebody made that connection and that somehow that imagery relates to mythology. But
I don't think they have done anything by accident here, so I'm going to assume that that is an intentional connection that if you know about it, you're supposed to make, but it doesn't take anything away from it if you don't.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so. I would agree with that totally. Yeah, with how much in depth that they try and put into the story with like deep cuts and stuff like this, I would totally buy that they're definitely playing up the Roman mythology to this and mythology and things like that, and what are the kinds of mythologies.
So. Yeah, and it made me think also about this group, the Fenris Rangers, that seems to have some type of influence or like power in this area, and almost like they're trying to clean up stuff that's been left over from like, you know, all the people that have scattered with the supernova and all that. So it'll be really interesting to see Seven and Picard kind of talk, because in a way she could see it from the perspective of like partly responsible for this mess I have to clean up. Mm-hmm. So that'll be interesting.
And that brings up a question that I had. Have Picard and Seven met up to this point?
Jerry Ryan has said in interviews they have not met up to this point.
Okay, because I thought I heard that somewhere, but I could not remember for sure.
No, she's definitely said in a couple of interviews they have not met before this point.
But they know of each other. Okay.
She knew exactly who it was.
Well,
as soon as she saw him.
They are unique people in that they are some of the few rescued Borg, so I'm sure they know who each other is.
But I think I'm thinking she must have gotten some information and knew Picard was on this ship, and that's why you owe me a ship, Picard.
Yeah.
Whereas Picard is surprised and he's like, Seven of Nine? Which seems like formal, but they haven't met before. He's heard of her, and it's kind of like when you're seeing someone that you know of and you're like, is it Chrissy DeClercq Zalagi? Are you here in my town? You know, like, maybe I'd have that reaction. Anyway, I think that's an interesting scene. But no, apparently they have not met previously, which certainly is going to come into the conversations in next week's episode. Which I think is interesting.
Well, anything else on La Serena?
And we're done talking about the episode. There's nothing else to discuss.
There is one other thing.
Nope.
There's one thing that's not terribly crazy, like the ice skating.
Let's say we're going to talk about Narek and Soji, right?
Yeah. Okay. So the next thing to talk about, the last thing to talk about for the episode is Narek and Soji and the time on the artifact.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let me ask you guys this. So I tweeted out, and I've had a lot of response on this, and I said, look, I'm loving Star Trek Picard. I really am. But I would be content if next week the Borg ship just suddenly blew up.
Yeah.
Because honestly, this plot point is not working for me. And I had a lot of people respond in agreement that they're like, it's not. Now, I understand we have 6 more episodes to go. And I understand a lot will probably happen. But right now, I am tired of this story. And that's frustrating in a 10-episode arc that I'm loving to have an aspect of this show that I'm just like, I don't even want to be here. Get me back to Picard.
Yeah. So let me tell you how I feel about that, because I think when I first watched this episode, I kind of felt a little bit the way you did. When they came on screen, I was like, oh, here it is again. But then I rewatched the episode today, and I was like pulling out some more things about what was going on with them and feeling like I was understanding a little bit more what was going on. So I mean, I think one of the main things that Narek is trying to do is he's trying to pull information out of Soji without activating her, which is what happened to, right? So I think he's doing these things, and maybe it seems like, you know, there's this sappy love story, or he's, you know, doing these weird things like they're sliding along in the ventilation corridor or whatever.
I have a theory about that. Hold on.
Let me finish what I've said, Francis, because I know you don't like it, but I actually liked it quite a bit more the second time that I saw it, because you do see within the episode that there are some seeds of doubt that are starting to be sown. Mm-hmm. Like, what were, you know, you're supposed to have been on this ship, but there's no record of you being on this ship. Yeah. And he's just kind of like pushing. Like, clearly, like, I enjoy the rest of Picard more than this part, but I was starting to get more into it and be like, okay, I wonder where this is going to lead. I think like the first time that it came up, I was like, eh, not too into it, but I've gotten like a little bit more into it with each episode. And I think that it is going to go somewhere next week and actually come to a head in some way.
Uh-huh. I really hope so. Yeah.
I feel what you're saying because I was feeling some of that, but I was actually getting more out of it the second time around. But Chrissy, what do you think about it?
Well, I have a theory about that ventilation shaft. Okay.
Oh, okay.
There's a reason it's there. There's a reason we've been told about it. I think at some point we are going to see people fighting on the ice in the ventilation shaft, and somebody's going to end up out the ship.
There's not actually ice there. It's just like a polished floor or something that they can slide along. That's what I thought. But
no, their breath was, you could see their breath. I got the impression that was cold. Yeah, that's a part of the ship that, like.
But I don't think it's like ice or anything.
Oh, well, maybe it's not.
Because they were in their socks, right?
Yeah.
So they were sliding on the metal. Like, it was just like a metal.
Okay. It doesn't matter if it's ice or slippery metal.
What do you think? I know that Brandon doesn't like it, and I'm getting somewhat more into it. Like, what do you think of this whole thing?
I am very interested in what happened on the Shaenar. I am very interested in this Romulan mythology / news that's going on.
Oh, by the way, did you notice that the cards they were playing with were in the first scene, I think, on Vashti were the same as the ones that Ramda had.
Mm-hmm.
I
thought
that was cool to see. Anyway.
Yeah. So that's what I'm interested in. Narek and Soji, whatever. You know, there's going to be a reason for this. And we'll know at the end.
Yeah. I mean, I think it could be done in a way, I think, that would be more interesting to more people. But I can appreciate where they're... I was actually appreciating it more on that rewatch than I have during the season, so...
See, like, my daughter asked me, like, when Rizzo... Like, does she have a Romulan name?
I don't know if she really does, because... The one who was presented first as Rizzo and then Narissa. I've been calling her Narissa lately, but that's not really a Romulan name, but I don't
know. Is that her name?
I'm not sure.
I think the first name that was given, is it in some of the subtitles? Maybe, but
maybe it is. Maybe they're twins, Narek and Narissa. Like, the names are close. Maybe they're twins, right?
Oh, so, that'd be funny.
My daughter's like, why is she choking him? And I'm like, they're telling us that she is so bad and Narek's falling in love with her. So Narek is so good. And Narek, we're going to supposedly like him by the end of the season when he becomes a good guy. Right. Yeah. Like, that's what they're telling us here. Right.
Yeah.
That's, I don't know. Like, so that's why they're doing this as well, and why they're dragging this on. Why is he falling in love with her? Because he can't help it, because he's a real good guy. Right. And he talks so nice to her when she's having her breakdowns. I think I love you. Right. So anyways,
that was manipulative, not nice, but
yeah. I know.
Okay. It's interesting.
I just think it's really interesting that the Romulans are the Japanese of the Star Trek universe.
What way are you thinking that?
Gunmadan? Godzilla? Gunmadan! Day of Annihilation! Gunmadan! Okay, it was funnier out of my head.
No, I didn't catch that. And I'm actually surprised that my husband didn't catch that, because he's a Godzilla guy, so...
I don't think it's really Gunmadan. It made me think of Godzilla and the Day of Annihilation, because Godzilla destroys everything. So they called it Gunmadan or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah.
So think about that.
Bad joke. Like, sorry, it fell flat.
Yeah, and definitely, like, the Narek Soji artifact part of this episode didn't take up much of the episode. It was probably 10 minutes, maybe.
Yeah, not very much at all.
Not very much, but yeah, go ahead.
But here I am. Okay. So I had this problem with Discovery as well in that, and we've got it here too, like based on what, what's her name?
Ramda.
Ramda says in that video interview that she's watching, she's like, annihilation. Annihilation of what? Annihilation of everything, all life, everywhere. Uh-huh. Again, like these just ridiculously extreme, like, consequences.
That was exactly the stakes in Discovery Season 1. Yeah.
It was exactly the same with the mushroom drive and whatnot. It's like, this is so important that everything will be annihilated if we fail. And it's like, I don't know. It's just,
well,
yeah, I don't know.
Here's the thing, though, with that. She's an expert on Romulan mythology. And for Romulan mythology, a supernova that destroys their planet would be the destruction of everything. So I didn't read that as the destruction of the entire universe, the way that, you know, like the Red Angel talked about in Discovery.
Except that she says of everything, all life, everywhere.
Right, but
she does say that, right?
Right, but she's talking in the context of something that was written on Romulus before they knew that there was life anywhere else. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. We'll just have to see where it's going.
Yeah. Right. So, do we want to say anything else about Narek and Soji other than don't go ice skating?
kill them with fire.
I think we're good. Until next week. Come on, you want to destroy Hugh too? That's not right.
Wow,
Hugh doesn't deserve that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we messaged back and forth. So far we've had Hugh for a very brief amount of time. Like right now, with how much I'm enjoying this plot line, it's not justified the return of Hugh. I want to see more Hugh. I hope to get him again. I don't read on Internet Movie Database, so I don't know if he's going to be in another episode.
And that's not necessarily accurate, but Jonathan Del Arco has said he'll be back.
Okay, well, that's good because, I mean, like, look at Discovery and how they promoted Discovery. And they had that, I don't know the guy's name, but they had the one guy who died twice in the first two episodes or whatever it was.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Like, they promoted him like he was going to be a big star of the show. He had him on all the things. Like, we might only get Hugh for another 5 minutes in one more episode, right?
No, I think it'll be more than that.
I hope so.
I think it will be more than that because where they're, one of the things I think they're going for has to do with former Borg, like, Seven, who I think is going to be in a lot of the rest of the season. So, no, we'll see him more, I think, for at least a couple more episodes. But
Seven going to be in a lot more episodes? Because I thought she was only in a couple.
I think at least three. Yeah. And if IMDb is to be believed, she's going to be in almost every episode for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
See, I mean, she's on the ship. So, yeah. I mean, I think it's possible. We'll see. I hope.
It wouldn't have made sense to bring Hugh back for that. They didn't need that to be Hugh unless there will be more. A reason for it to be Hugh. Yeah. So,
yeah.
So we'll see.
I know. We just need to jump into the future for Brandon to get all the answers.
Yeah. This is the problem with him not dropping the whole thing at once. But at the same time, then we get to have these lovely conversations.
I like that we have these conversations every week.
Yeah, me too. Because if we had seen the whole episode, this conversation would be completely different. If we'd seen all 10 episodes, this conversation would not be.
And we couldn't have like one, 40-hour long podcast or something about the whole thing. So.
Well, I mean, all of the ones we've done so far have basically been that long.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Well, I think that does it for episode-specific stuff. Favorite canon and book connections, other than Last Best Hope, which everyone needs to read right now.
Yeah. Go read. Go buy the book. I don't know if it's going to still be on sale, but as of the recording of this, which is Friday night, it was $3.99 on Canadian.
Just for Canadians.
Yeah. Just Canadian Amazon, whatever the book thing is on Amazon. Yeah. I bought a hardcover copy.
I did too.
It was $3.99 for the digital version of it. My favorite canon connection was that the ship that Soji was on was called the Ellison.
Yeah, that was cool, wasn't it?
Yeah,
After
Harlan Ellison. So that's my canon connection that I wanted to point out for this episode.
Nice. I mean, as usual, I have a lot. I can never narrow it down to one because I just love the different connections.
Well, it doesn't say it has to be one.
So besides ones that we've already talked about, I just like that you see Picard kind of fencing with Elnor, which is a connection back to him fencing in... Well, he's had multiple Paris, episodes. Iborg, and Lessons. Yeah. And Iborg is one of them, which is interesting. Because Hugh's in that. let's see. So we talked about the Ellison. Oh, I really like that Elnor is talking about how, you know, Picard used to tell him stories about Data, and he says he had an orange cat named Spot. I've never seen a cat, you know. I don't know. There was just something that was really cute about mentioning Spot like that. Let's see, and we talked about Emmett is the nickname. Do I have anything else? There was one thing I wasn't sure what to connect it to, but Narek asks how Soji speaks such excellent Romulan, and she says there was a friend of her father's, a professor at some university. And I was like, is there something in the novel or something that relates to that? I wasn't sure. I couldn't quite come up with something, but...
No, that's more of him trying to fish out for her to realize that she's not a real person. Yeah. He's trying to fish out that information.
Yeah.
Oh, where did you learn it? Oh, from this person, right? Which we know that she never actually went there, right?
Yeah. I got it. Okay.
Yeah.
You're right, because she's like 3 years old or something. But,
right.
Yes, I don't like that plot, but I am paying attention to it.
Oh, no. There are things going on. Okay, you're right. So anyway, I think there were some... I mean, of course, you know, Seven is a giant connection. But yeah, there wasn't as much this time, but there was some fun stuff in there.
Chrissy, any?
Really just Last Best Hope. I was reading it leading up into it, and I had read all but the last 50 pages or so when I saw it, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And definitely... Like, I agree with you, Brandon. So, it's much more connected than the Discovery novels have been to what's going on.
Yeah. And mentioning the sale on the Canadian Kindle store, it is, in the States, it's the hard copies 20% off at Barnes & Noble. So,
I guess one question that, since we're just talked about the book, when do you think the comic takes place? At what point, it's got to take place during the book, but like at what point during the book do you think it takes place?
I haven't finished the book yet, so. But in the comic, it says, I think most of it's in 2385, right?
Okay, so somewhere in part two of the book, I guess.
Yeah, I would say around the, maybe a little bit after they start settling Vashti.
Have to figure that out. See if we can figure that out.
Yeah.
I should ask Mike Johnson on Twitter. One other little connection that it was a point that I forgot to bring up for the Borg plot line of this. So they're drinking Romulan ale.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yep. And I wanted to point out that Soji says to him, you know things while they're drinking. So great. Narek is Tyrion now. He drinks and he knows things.
Is he Tyrion or is he Jaime?
I don't know. He's both, I guess. He's a Lannister through and through, I guess, from both ends. So she actually says that. She's like, you know things. She says to him, I'm like, great, he's Tyrion. He drinks and he knows things.
Oh, and something that I had mentioned in our group and on Twitter that I didn't mention here was you can clearly see that the former Romulan senator has ridges on his hair.
Oh, yeah, that was a good catch. Cool.
I think in a previous one, I had said, does Narissa have ridges on her ears? And we weren't sure. Yeah. But this guy definitely does. And someone also sent an image of one of the Romulans from 2009. And they do have very subtle like ridging on their ears as well. So that's cool.
He's part Tiburonian.
Oh, that must be what it is. Yeah. That's just established in the books. Oh, no. You're right. That's from... I know which episode you're talking about now. Never mind.
Tiburon, the Tiburonian. So if you go to the We Reach Brother episode,
the
guy with a really big elephant type ears.
You're right.
Is a Tiburonian.
One of my favorite episodes of Star Trek.
And also in the episode of DS9, The Ship, there's a Tiburonian Starfleet officer in the background.
Is there? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. But anyway.
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sure we'll get more connections as we go here. So. I don't know. Do we have any questions or concerns about the episode that we haven't
Brandon
handled yet?
Brandon always wants to do the predictions first. So,
oh, excuse me. I'm sorry.
I don't have any predictions this week.
You have no predictions? I have predictions.
Go ahead. Predictions? I got none.
All right.
Okay.
I have no predictions other than, and I know Brandon hasn't seen the preview, but what?
The preview kind
what?
Of.
Yeah.
I saw the quick thing that was on the Ready Room with all the pop-up ads.
I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, that's a little bit different than the other preview. But yeah, I mean, I think the preview tells you they're going to Free Cloud.
Yeah.
And my prediction is we'll see Maddox next week, I think.
Oh, okay, yeah. So, yes, I have that prediction, too.
Yes.
Okay.
I think we're absolutely going to see Maddox in this show.
Yeah.
I'm 100%
convinced. Oh, absolutely, for sure. So, and I think it'll be next week because that's when they get to Free Cloud.
Right.
I paused the preview on the picture of the guy that falls down and he's got the grayish beard.
Yeah, and I was like, is that Maddox?
And I couldn't tell.
And you haven't seen that preview, sorry,
yeah,
Brennan.
So that's, yeah.
But I couldn't tell either. They say the name Maddox and there's like a guy mm-hmm. with a beard on, like a gray beard on the floor, and it's like, who is that?
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, that I think we will next week. I actually had something. It's not a prediction. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's more of like a very long shot hope. So I was thinking about this group that Seven's part of, the Fenris Rangers, right? Like they're kind of out there trying to make things right. They're almost like a resistance movement kind of to what's going on. So it made me think, like, in my dreams, it's probably not going to happen, but I would just so love it if the Fenris Rangers has like Kira and Rolaren in it. But that's just my total pipe dream. But I just thought like this would be maybe something they'd be interested in. So but I do think, I predicted it before, but I do think somewhere in this season we're gonna see someone in this show that we didn't expect that we've seen before. And I don't know who that's gonna be.
Like Worf?
I mean, yeah, I had it as a prediction before that Worf and LaForge would be in the show, but I think someone else, like somebody unexpected, but I really wish I could say who. If it's Kira, that would be cool. But
better be Pulaski.
That'd be Pulaski, awesome.
Yeah.
She said that actress said she'd never do sci-fi again, though. So.
But so anyway, that's the extent of my predictions. I mean, other than that, like I think we've pretty much seen a lot of the stuff that was in the previews or the trailers that came out before the show. Mm-hmm. So I really don't know, like in the back half of the show, kind of what's going to happen. So,
except for Riker and Troy.
That's right. That's episode 6, I guess. So, but anyway, just a few there. Yeah. We'll see what happens.
All right. That's, oh, one thing about the preview too. I posed the question last week if Free Cloud is a real place or a virtual place, and I think this establishes it as a real place. I think.
Yeah.
So.
Kind of seems like it.
Yeah.
Although there's a lot. Anyway, won't spoil.
Yeah, we won't go for that.
For Brandon, but it'll be an interesting episode for sure.
Yes.
Well, I saw that like there was like all those ads for like gambling and boxing. Like there was that clip from the Ready Room.
Right.
I haven't seen the Ready Room.
The preview that the after the episode, at least on CBS All Access, shows them like down on Free Cloud and like going through this place. It's interesting.
We don't get the commercial on Crave. I don't know why.
That's weird.
Yeah, that is weird. They have to put on costumes, which is why I go like, what?
You know? I think that'll be a lot of fun.
I think it will be, but it's, And then Trek Core was
style episode.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, that's true. Trek Core was tweeting out all the pictures of people in Star Trek who've had an eye patch because of that one.
Oh, is that what that's from?
Yes.
I saw that picture around. I didn't know what that was. People were saying who wore it best, and I'm like, I didn't know what this picture was.
Picard
from.
Apparently at like, one has point, an eye patch in the preview.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah,
and he flips it up.
It's going to be wild, I think.
I think it is.
Episode already.
You hate it before you love it.
It could be fantastic. Could be like a Dixon Hill thing.
I don't know.
Yeah. It will be.
All right. So we're good with predictions. I covered all of my concerns and questions. Is there anything we want to add to that?
Aubrey had a nitpick.
Ooh, yes.
Okay, what's that?
So I didn't catch this. I have no question concerns other than everything we've talked about in the episode, but Aubrey had a nitpick. So because they focused so much on pausing the bird in the hologram, she turns to me and she's like, why is the fireplace still moving?
Beautiful.
The fire in the fireplace is still moving.
It is.
Beautiful.
So, I thought that was cute. I don't train my daughter to look for nitpicks. Yeah. My 9-year-old daughter found that all on her own.
I think there's at least one episode of TNG where that happens I think maybe it's even Elementary Dear Data where, you know, they pause it, but the fire is still going in the background. But yeah, that's really something.
So that was Aubrey found that one. So I wanted to make sure to mention that one. Okay. But I don't know. I thought the episode was great. I love it. And I mean, as much as I dislike Narek and Soji, it's not taking away from my enjoyment of the show.
That's good.
I'm still loving the show. I think the show is great. I am fully aware with the way that I've been ripping on Discovery that that with this whole hologram of his office and stuff like this, if that happened on Discovery, I would probably be ripping that apart. But I'm just enjoying Picard so much that it's not bothering me because of things. I'm just like, ah, whatever.
I think you're on board whenever Picard's on screen.
Yeah.
I love Picard. I mean, I don't know.
You know,
I'm liking the show. I'm seeing the complaints, you know, and I'm reading them and I'm like, okay, well, whatever. I mean, it doesn't really bother me. Like, you don't like the nickname. I don't know. I think it's fine.
Yeah.
You know, so, but, you know, when it comes to fandom, like, there's a lot of people out there that get caught up with, like, the trolls that are out there and, like, people that are just actively hating on the show because there is people out there. And my only advice is just disregard those people, disregard them, mute them, block them on Twitter.
Yes.
Right. Because there are people who just doesn't matter what is on screen. They're going into it and not liking it. And yeah.
Yeah. So. Actually, this brings us to the people who are using CBS All Access to watch this. If you turn it on in the next, I don't know how long this banner is going to be up, but they have a big banner that says the Star Trek universe. And I brought a smile to my face. I love the idea. And I tweeted about it because it's this is how we should be thinking about it. And the analogy being with the Marvel universe, and people don't go around saying like, oh, you know, I don't like Deadpool or I don't like, you know, Captain America. And so therefore they're not part of Marvel. Okay, but people are saying that about Star Trek, and it's like, just if you don't like that one, just watch a different one. Go on with your life. You don't have to watch Deadpool. You can watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's fine.
And there's like five more that are coming, so
maybe
like something in there. So I think we've talked about a lot of the questions, but I did have a couple of more questions kind of that came up, because I think, this plot with Narek and Soji has been, and what's on the Borg artifact has been restricted to that, but they're kind of heading toward a place where they're going to come together at a certain point, right?
Yeah.
Because the whole thing is Picard is basically looking for Soji and he thinks he's going to find her through Maddox and whatever. So my question is, what will that be like when they actually meet up? How does that affect the story and what we think about it? Because it has been kind of a bit static for a while. So when that's changed up and maybe Picard meets Soji and Narek or whatever, like what happens? So that was one thing. Also, my question was, you know, Seven's part of these Fenris Rangers. Do we see more of them? And another thing, in one of the trailers, Seven is cradling someone who apparently died.
Yeah.
Who is that? Are we going to find out in the next couple of weeks? So more questions of what's going to happen than concerns, really.
It was Chakotay. I called it a long time ago. Her one true love.
We will see. I don't know.
So any more questions and concerns, or shall we go into
final? Well, I guess something that Justin just said made me think of something. Mm-hmm. I bet you Picard is going to be responsible for Soji activating.
Ooh.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah. I think that Narek is going to go slow enough that it's going to be Picard is the result. Or Picard's the reason.
Hmm. Yeah.
That'll be interesting.
Well, but it would be interesting, though, if she activates and has the same thing as Dodge, where it's like, I'm safe with you, or if it's something totally different, right?
Or actually, that could be it. Narek ends up activating her, and then she leaves the Borg cube to go find Picard.
Maybe with Hugh.
Oh, yeah.
With Hugh?
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. And they all meet up at Free Cloud and have a giant party.
Costume party.
Costume party episode.
And it turns into a sitcom.
But yeah, that could be. I think they're like, I know you're not that into it, but I think there are some interesting things when those two intersect, what'll actually happen.
I think so too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, what you were saying earlier there, Chrissy, about the universe, I think it was Michael Chabon. Like, they're actively promoting it now as the Star Trek universe.
Good.
Yes.
I think the Twitter account, it happened a couple months ago where their Twitter account icon said Star Trek universe.
Okay.
And then a little. I think they had kind of unveiled that at, maybe it was at Comic-Con even, talking about it as the Star Trek universe. Yeah.
Missed that or forgot
about
it.
And then a little shameless promotion. So over on my network, the United Federation of Podcast Network, Amy and Patrick, who used to be on The Edge here on Trek FM, they've got a show called All Good Things now, and it's All Good Things, a Star Trek universe podcast.
Yes. Yep.
So we call it that. So.
And that is a good job. Yeah, that's been a fun podcast to listen to. When everybody's done listening to this. Right. So
listen to this first. Yeah. Don't diss us for them.
Definitely not.
Yours comes out first.
This is true. This is true. All right. So then, do we have anything left for final thoughts here?
I'm spent.
I feel like a lot of times we give our final thoughts as we're going through. Yeah. So yeah, just I really enjoyed this episode. Just looking forward to more. Bring on Thursday. Yeah.
I'm amazed at how much we're talking about these episodes, and we're going in depth because
when
I was doing The Edge, it was like an hour come and go, and here we're hitting around the hour 45 sweet mark for these, and we're talking.
I know.
It's not wasted discussion.
No.
Man, hopefully our listeners feel the same way. All right. Well, it has been so much fun talking about the Picard episode, Absolute Candor, but that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Earl Grey.
Oh, let me think. What's an interesting Star Trek sound of
phasers?
See, that's tough because how do you make a phaser sound? I don't know if you can make that with the human.
Or you can do photon torpedoes.
I'll just be the one that's pew, pew, pew.
Oh, pew, pew, pew. Yeah. The Discovery phasers. Okay, cool. Awesome choice. And to come back to the point, I think I'm deleting this scene.
Literary Treks.
What was it that caused him not to be with his Paul immediately after coming out? What was it that made that relationship strange? Yeah. And I think it was that Culber had really lost himself in a lot of ways. And while Paul was his anchor, when he came back to Paul, Paul had learned something by losing you. And I think he became the Paul that Hugh needed. And I think that scared you a little bit. Mm-hmm. Until he sort of found himself again.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
Because we've never seen all of those hairy mud bots again.
Yes, thankfully.
Yeah, I would appreciate though, like a mention in history in season 3. It's like, oh yeah, here's this time where the whole galaxy was crawling with these different hairy mud bots, and rounding them up took years.
That's what brought down the Federation. Harry Mudbots.
That was it. It was Harry Mudbots.
Harry Mudbots. Oh no.
The Line, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
We got a lot of answers in this episode, which was really surprising to me. So, there, you know, who's Dodge and whatnot, like, that's a thing I expected to find out in episode 10 going into this show, right? And here we are, you know, halfway through episode 1 and we know who Dodge is. And I'm like, okay, this is interesting. I'm, you know, that's cool that we're getting a lot of information. But getting that information is opening up more questions.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, please be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or on the desktop Apple Podcast app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. That helps others to find the show.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, and most third-party apps. And you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
Should we read our new review?
I was going to say no.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
I'm going to read it. Absolutely, I'm going to read it.
All right. All right.
So we got ourselves a new review, and I'm going to read it here. Oh, I guess the wrong one here. So here we go. So we got a 1-star review. on iTunes here, and it says it's a bad time for all. Really a drag with one of the hosts bullying the other two. Has to have his way no matter what, even on the most minor points. The other two cower in terror. Put somebody on who knows and loves Star Treks, not the three. Not quite sure what that means at the end, but anyways, that's from Strexter. So, anyways, you know, I get the fact that some people, I'm just going to assume that's me that they're talking about. So, which is fine. I get that some people don't like my personality and whatnot, but, I mean, I think
that's
we've
a
got
very
a pretty
harsh way of putting it. Yeah. I mean, I think you do put up, you do like passionately put across your points, but I certainly don't ever feel like you're bullying me.
By
I
no
think
means.
That's an extreme reaction, but you know, well, interesting.
Yeah, so I think we have a very, very good discussion. And honestly, yeah. Like, Chrissy and I are agreeing on a lot of points, too. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's Justin who's the bully.
They did say no. His, although maybe like seven, it's actually yeah. Chrissy.
Maybe it's Chrissy. Yeah. Oh, Chrissy.
Yeah. I do have kind of a deep voice, but yeah.
Interesting. Well, keep the reviews coming anyway.
Yes.
Keep them coming. Keep the reviews coming. We'll read them all. Yeah. We'll read them all. I don't mind.
And I think we've gotten a lot of positive feedback, especially on the Babel conference.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, I do too. I think this is the first one star we've had.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But, well, yeah,
you can't please everybody, so. No. So for those of you listening who don't want to give us a one-star review, you can be sure to check out our Picard coverage throughout the week. Commentary will be available as tracks on the line, feedback discussed on postcards on the line, and you can catch the full analysis right here on the main show, all hour and 45 minutes of it. You'll find all of these in the main feed for the line and in the Trek FM master feed.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on Picard, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook, where Christopher D. Littlefield will collect your feedback for postcards on the line. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select the line. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter and Instagram at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Chrissy, where can people contact you when you're not pausing your Holo Matrix but hoping that the fire keeps burning?
That makes sense. All right. In addition to here on the line, of course, people can find me in the Babel Conference and on Twitter at The Goddess Livia. That's TheGoddessLivia. You can also follow my work as an historian by liking the Facebook page my fellow historian partner and I run, History with the Zilagis, and that's spelled Zilagyis, where we post about our historical research, including my blog and short podcast, Ancient Aliens is BS, where I go episode by episode debunking the History Channel series. And I mentioned last week that my husband, Jason, was doing a talk on the Nuremberg trials, and we had a massive turnout. I don't know if there was anybody that heard about it from here, but it was the largest turnout that they've ever had for one of these lunch talks with 92 people in
there.
That's fantastic. Yeah. And the live stream worked out beautifully. So if you go to the Facebook History with the Zilagis page, you can listen and watch.
Yeah, I think all our listeners in that area of Michigan must have gone to attend, right?
Quite possibly.
They were hoping to see Chrissy.
Yeah.
Why not? And get her autograph.
Something like that, yeah. So, Brandon, where can people contact you when you're not criticizing romances on board cubes?
You can find me participating in them by sliding on the weird ground and going, ah, la, 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 la. Oh, that was so weird.
Yes, it was.
You can also find me on Twitter at Brandon Metella. You can find me over on the United Federation of Podcasts with my friend Zach. We have a show called Franchise Fatigue, which is all about movies, remakes, and sequels. And coming out right away is Creepshow 2, which is great fun. That discussion is a whole heck of a lot of fun. And we haven't recorded our episode on Creepshow 3, but I'm absolutely dreading it because I think Creepshow 3 was the worst movie I have ever seen in my life. It is complete and total
ever
trash.
Wow.
Don't watch it. You can find me over on the Fandom Podcast Network with a show called Good Evening and Alfred Hitchcock Podcast, which is all about Hitchcock films, and we cover those in chronological order. And I guess that's pretty much it. So, Justin, where can people contact you when you're not snuggling up to Captain Picard when he's reading you his story?
Oh, that's so sweet. That'll help to gain back the fans that were thinking of not listening because they love Creepshow 3. So, good job.
If there's been 10 people on the planet that have seen Creepshow 3, I would be amazed.
When I'm not thinking about those things, you can find me elsewhere on the network co-hosting Earl Grey. That's our dedicated Star Trek The Next Generation podcast. Have a great time every week with my friends Amy Nelson and Joe Keegan, talking about all things TNG and some connections to Picard as well. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek. And you can find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook. If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, the Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producer, Norman Lau. Thank you so much for supporting Trek FM and especially The Line.
So, join us next time for another episode of The Line, and we'll be talking about the next Picard episode, Stardust City Rag.
As always, listeners, our house and our hearts are open to you.
And a money gift is always appropriate, especially on Patreon.
La la la.
That's good.
Really like that song. That's good.